You're a runner. From the starting line to the finish line, you know that every breath and every step is a gift. You train hard and always welcome a new challenge. When the training gets tough, you stay focused and committed to your goals. You are strong, healthy, fast. Now you are ready to take your training to the next level. Hey runners, welcome to the Freedom to Run podcast. Thanks for listening. This is episode 35 and I'm Jeremy Hafes. We all run for different reasons. Maybe we run for fitness, for the camaraderie from a running group, or simply as a challenge or competition. And some run to relieve stress or help us get through tough times in life. Regardless of why we run, we are all runners experiencing the freedom to run. Amy Ebling shares her stories of running, training, yoga, and more on her blog at Running Yogi Mom. She started running after volunteering at the Grandma's Marathon and hasn't looked back. She's learned a lot about running and herself along the way and has since completed numerous full marathons and several ultra marathons. In my conversation with Amy, she explains her typical training week, which isn't what you'd expect from someone who regularly completes ultras. And she also shares an incredible story from something that happened several years ago. You're going to love this conversation, so let's get right into it. Hey, Amy, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
I'm excited to hear your story and learn more about what you have going and your goals and really your past and how you got started in running. And take us back to that first marathon that you ran in 2008.
Sure. So I guess rewinding back a little bit before 2008, in 2007, I volunteered at the finish line of my hometown marathon, handing out medals to all of the finishers as they crossed the finish line, Grandma's Marathon in Duluth, Minnesota. And I just found that energy really electric and really energizing and almost addicting. And I remember thinking, you know, as I'm putting these medals over these finishers of every shape and size and background, like, I need to do this. Like, I was captivated so quickly and thought, that's going to be my goal in 2008. I'm going to run this next year. So it kind of went on the back burner for a while. And then I don't remember if I saw an email or someone maybe came into the gym that I was working at and mentioned that they had registered, but it jogged my memory. And it was actually, my birthday was in March of 2008. And I remember going home from work that day and registering on the spot. And the rest was history. I mean, 2008, it was a beautiful run. It was challenging. It was 26.2 miles of blood, sweat, and tears.
And that Grandma's Marathon, that's a fun one. There's a lot of people from my area here around the Lincoln and Omaha area that make their way up because Grandma's Marathon has a good history for just being a great race. And I love hearing everybody's story about how they got into running or got motivated and how the just volunteering inspired you to get out there and run. I love that.
Yeah, it's always good to give back to the community that supports you, but then, you know, to end up falling in love with that running community based on volunteering for it. I mean, that was a match made in heaven.
So how did your body react to that first marathon? Were you pretty sore? Were you like, no way am I doing another marathon? Or when you crossed the finish and I was like, yeah, I want to do another one.
So I was a bit of a rookie, and I think my longest distance before registering for Grandma's that year was a 5K, and I had no idea what I was getting into. For some reason, 26.2 miles didn't scare me. I think that innocence and that ignorance almost made it a little bit easier. I had no training plan. I didn't know how to train for a marathon, what to do. I think my longest run leading up to that was 5 miles on an elliptical. I don't recommend that training plan.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
But, you know, if there's anything that I am, I'm stubborn, and I definitely know how to not quit. So I smiled the entire way. It took me 5 hours and 38 minutes, I think. So I definitely got my money's worth. But it was stunning. The weather was beautiful. You know, you couldn't wear headphones back then, so you had to rely on your fellow runners and people around you to entertain you. So the crowd support at Grandma's Marathon is notorious for being phenomenal. And I can't express that enough. I've run it many times since. So that really carried me. As far as the recovery goes, I was such a rookie. I don't recommend my novice training plan to anyone at all. And I've since obviously improved it. But it took a while for me to get back into the swing of things. I think I left the next day and went on a hiking trip in South Dakota. And that probably saved me a little bit because it forced me to have to keep moving and, you know, walk it off a bit. But I think I knew I was hooked, but I definitely had a lot to learn.
Sure. Wow. So your long workout was a 5 mile, maybe on the elliptical. That's crazy to think about because everybody's so like, you got to get your 20 miler in, you got to get the long runs and the mileage every week. Wow. So yeah, it can be done.
I had no idea what I was doing. I knew I would not stop. And that was what was keeping me going. But again, I've since learned my lesson and I know how to train for a marathon a little bit better, but 5 miles on an elliptical. There we go.
So then moving into your second marathon, where was that at? And did it take place yet in 2008 or did you wait till 2009 for the next one?
I want to say, gosh, you're taking me back now. I want to say my second one was Grandma's the following year. I don't think I had a big race in between, but I knew that I had more in me. I knew I had mentors that helped write out training plans for me and tell me a little bit about what to do and what not to do and what has worked for them. So I came back in 2008 to run Grandma's again with, you know, almost perfect training under my belt. And then, you know, as races often do, you have unpredictable things that happen. It was probably one of the record hottest years for Grandma's Marathon. That was 2009. Yeah. So my first Grandma's Marathon was 2008. I came back the next year and ran it in 2009. And it was excruciatingly hot. So I actually only beat my time by 4 minutes, even though my training was exponentially much better. And I think that's what actually fueled my fire to really start pursuing marathons more regularly. I registered for a fall race that year, trained through the summer and through the heat, and then knocked probably 35 minutes off my PR for that fall marathon because the weather was so much cooler and I had a good base under me for mileage.
Did you mix in any other half marathons or other just formal races beyond the 5K that you ran before your first marathon as training races?
I did. So in 2009, I ran a beautiful race in Stillwater, Minnesota, right on the La Crosse whatever river is right there in Hudson. It was beautiful. So I ran the Stillwater Marathon. The Stillwater Half Marathon. It was stunning. And I used that as a training race to kind of gauge, you know, how I was doing and get a little bit more of those like faster paced distances under my belt. And then for my fall race, I think I incorporated another half, Whistle Stop, in northern Wisconsin. Again, a beautiful race, flat and fast, and a really, really stunning course. So those types of races, halves and 10Ks, started to become more a part of the training regimen. And let's be honest, when you're training for those longer distance, it's nice to have a little bit of swag along the way to keep you motivated.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And then a couple of years later, you had a crazy event happen to you. Talk about that because you were telling me about before we started recording and it just relates to this whole freedom to run mindset and approach like a story I've never heard before. So share a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. In 2011, I started skydiving as a hobby. So making jump after jump after jump. And I ended up getting my coach's rating and helping people kind of explore their passion for skydiving as well. And it just kind of complemented that adventurous lifestyle that I love. And in November of 2013, I was involved in a mid-air skydiving plane crash. So it was my 490th skydive. We were flying a formation load where there's two planes in the air flying almost side by side in a staggered formation. And, you know, something of this nature, it's a little bit more of an advanced skydive. We don't allow like rookies or tandems or people who have never gone before on an event like this. So everyone who was on the plane was very well experienced. Anyway, right about the time that we decided to get out and jump, our planes had a bit of a miscommunication and exploded. They hit each other in midair right before we jumped from the planes and went up in flames. I mean, wings sheared off, doors sheared off, shrapnel was everywhere. It was literally like we were jumping into a war zone in the sky. Thankfully, no one was severely injured. There were 9 of us skydivers and 2 pilots. One pilot did his control checks and realized he was not going to have control of his plane. It was going down with or without him. So he made the decision to jump out of the plane and use his emergency pilot's rig to save his life. That plane actually landed in an empty parking lot of, you know, in November, it was a fairground, so there wasn't a fair going on. It was just an empty parking lot. So no one was injured or hurt or on the ground. And then the other pilot did his control checks and realized he didn't have power in his plane, but he did have control over it. So he was able to land it safely on the runway at the airport. So as you can imagine, even though none of us really had any physical damage or injuries, a lot of us did experience some like PTSD symptoms and some anxiety and stress reactions afterward as a result of what we had just experienced. Some people called it survivor's guilt. Some people called it PTSD. Call it what you will. We were affected by it. It was absolutely life changing. So what running did for me in that, I knew I had a situational event that was affecting me and causing heightened stress, heightened anxiety, and it was affecting my day-to-day life. So I figured out that when I started running these long distances, it was almost like, you know, stress and anxiety would throw this like deck of cards up in the air, and there were cards flying everywhere. And when I ran, it was almost like my brain was organizing the deck of cards and putting things back in order for me. So running became very much an integral part of the treatment and therapy that I went through after that plane crash to kind of rehabilitate how I existed.
That is unbelievable. Unbelievable story. I had chills numerous times when you're sharing that story. And I love the power of running and how it can bring you back and heal and get your mind right. And it's all about that freedom to run. Man, you are, and everyone else in those planes are so blessed to even be here. But then to still have the ability to go out and run, that's what freedom to run is all about. And that's an incredible story, and I'm glad that you're still out there going out in the trail, pushing yourself, joining the races, and yeah, I love it. So good work.
Yeah, exercise is medicine, right? It's a tool that we can use for so many things. So being in the health and fitness industry for so many years, this wasn't foreign to me, but it was like, it was right in my face. I had the opportunity to be my own guinea pig now and really put my money where my mouth was. So it's incredible.
That is incredible. And way to bounce back and still run, because something after that, it could have been easy to just slip into a mode of not exercising, but you stayed at it. And then now you're currently to date, 19 full marathons plus some ultras. Talk about that and what got you into ultras.
So, gosh, that's a loaded story, I think. I think it's really good to do things that scare you every once in a while, just to see what you're made of. You know what I mean? Like find a goal that really just knocks your socks off and forces you to prove to yourself what you've got in you. Does that make sense, or does it sound crazy?
Absolutely. And on October 5th, I'm going to release an episode that's Face Your Fears. It's all about that. We have to set goals that we're a little bit scared of to challenge ourselves and get us out of the comfort zone. Because even as runners, yeah, we strive for excellence and we work hard. We still slip into a comfort zone in our training. We sign up for the same races that we've always ran because, well, we know the course, we feel comfortable there, and we just settle. And that's not what life's about. It's about facing the fear, setting big goals, and going out there and challenging ourselves.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that's something that I really try to embrace almost daily and try to inspire other people to embrace too. What's wrong with scaring yourself every once in a while in a good way, you know, in a positive way? What's wrong with finding something that seems a little bit out of reach and seeing what happens if you go for it?
Absolutely. And then, so that first kind of little challenge in the ultra scene, you signed up, was it a 50K?
My first technical ultra was a 27.4 miler, in Northern Minnesota on the Superior Hiking Trail. I was dating my husband at the time. So he was my boyfriend. We had a recent relationship and, he knew that I loved running. So I think he was trying to impress me and found this, this really cool race called the Grand Traverse. It's pretty laid back. It's a stunning course on the Superior Hiking Trail in Northern Minnesota that, you know, it's my backyard. So it was very easy, but they came in four different distances. And, the price, I don't think the price mattered what distance you went. So for me, you know, with marathon after marathon under my belt, I was like, well, if they're all the same price, I'm going to go for the biggest one. And he was like, okay, yeah, let's do it. Not knowing that he, you know, didn't have the training under his belt, didn't have the experience under his belt. So it took us 10 and a half hours to finish.
Wow. But you finished. Good work.
We did. He was a little sore. I remember him, like, the look on his face the next day when I got up off the couch and walked into the kitchen to make coffee, and he couldn't even move. You know, there was a little bit of jealousy, but there was a little bit of angst, too, like, oh, dang, what did I do? Yep. So, yeah, that first ultra was technically a 27.4, so not much more than a marathon, but I've done a couple of 50Ks since. I did a 55K and then just completed my first 50 miler in May of this year up by Philadelphia.
Yeah, good work on that. And any
thanks.
Any goals for doing the 100K or even 100 miler someday?
You know, like I said, it's good to do things that scare you every once in a while. This year has kind of been the year of a lot of long distance, and I thank my family every single day for their patience and their support. So I want to say that 2018 is probably going to be a bit of a recovery year for me. Just taking a step back, letting my body do what it wants to. If I want to go run, I'm going to go run. If I find a good, cheap local race, maybe I'll do that. It's really just going to be more about getting back to the basics and enjoying what I do instead of hitting a target goal of a specific distance. You know, I have a friend who's just new to the ultra scene as well, and he's reached out a couple of times asking for pacing. I think that'd be super great. You know, I can take my experience, I can take the pressure off of me and help someone else succeed in the sport. I think that's where, like, the next year and a half is going to be for me.
Yeah, there you go. That'd be fun. Yeah, be a crew member for for different friends and different runners getting into ultras. That would be great. Yeah, a great way to kind of change up your routine as well. And I want to talk about the training that you use for an ultra and for your marathons, mm-hmm. and also how your training schedule, because you mentioned it, of just the business of life, kind of it's a kind of that give and take, and how you balance all of that with work and hobbies and family and yet have time to train. How does a week of training look for you?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, family comes first. So anything that compromises my family or anything that they're not on board with is automatically out the door. That goes without saying. The minute that your running takes precedent over your family, I think you have an issue. That being said, I do have a very supportive family. They know how much it means to me. And so far, I have yet to compromise that. I do ask a lot of them, but most of the time I'm waking up at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning to make sure I get my run out of the way as soon as possible so I can spend the rest of the day with them. Now that may mean, does mom fall asleep in the middle of a movie when it's, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock and it's dark and everyone's sitting down and things are quiet? Perhaps, yeah. But it's a bit of a balance. So a typical week for training for me, Monday is kind of focusing on strength training. So today, for instance, I did like a high intensity interval workout focusing on my leg strength, really building the glute muscles, those stabilizer muscles around your knee, quads, hamstrings, you know, really that power train of muscles that are going to support your runs. Tuesday and Thursday, I'm actually an aqua spin instructor. It sounds a little bit weird, but we throw bicycles in pools and have an aqua spin class. So that's a really great recovery workout for me personally, because it's high intensity, no impact really, because you're in the water. And it's like the perfect active rest workout for me to get my blood flowing without compromising my body and my muscles. You have so much support with the water, with that hydrostatic support, that pushing yourself. I mean, and with water workouts, you have the power to control your intensity. So if you want to take it a little bit easy, then that's really easy to do. If you want to push yourself, well, the harder you push yourself, the harder it's going to be. So Tuesday and Thursday are my aqua spin days, and I usually take the class with my participants because I enjoy it so much. Wednesday is a running day for me. So I do short and fast, or I do short and hills. So short for me is usually 5 or 6 miles. And then fast for me is right around an 8 to 8:30 mile. I'm not very quick. So that's fast for me. And then we try to incorporate hills every other week, at least. And those are brutal. Friday is most of the time a complete day off. So I don't do anything. I stay off my feet as much as possible. I might take the dogs for a walk. But I know I'm going to have a long run over the weekend, and I need to have that solid rest day. There's so much to be said for that. That's a lot of athletes, I think, take for granted, the benefit of a full rest day. Saturdays are typically my long run. So depending on what the schedule looks like with the family, Saturday or Sunday, I'm going to pick one for my long run. Most of the time it ends up being Saturday. And then the alternate is either active rest or complete rest with some yoga. So it's a busy week.
That is a busy week. And then, so you've got, is it 2 days of running then?
Yeah. It's unconventional. I don't know anybody else that really does it, but I subscribe to the less is more. It does put a lot more focus on the other workouts that you do, making them that much more important. So I run a Wednesday and then once on the weekends.
Okay. And you follow that same kind of weekly schedule when you're training for an ultra or a marathon too?
So marathons, yeah, the training schedule doesn't vary for a marathon. It's Wednesday and then my long run on the weekend. When we were training for the ultra, specifically the 50 miler, most of the time my Wednesday run was cut out and I replaced that with a low impact workout. And instead, because you have to get your legs used to running on tired legs. The best way to do that is to do a long run one day, followed by a mid-distance to semi-long run the next day. So typically when we were training for that 50 miler, it would look like a 20 miler on Saturday and then anywhere from 6 to 12 miles on Sunday, or 30 miles on Saturday and 6 to 8 miles on Sunday. So you're hitting that back-to-back mileage just so that your Sunday run was going to suck. It wasn't going to be beautiful at all. But there was a lot of purpose behind running on tired legs, and it absolutely paid off. I don't know many people who will subscribe to running twice a week for long distance runs. But for me, it's what I have to do.
Yeah. And what makes it work for you is that it's not just the fact that you're getting two runs in a week, you're getting other very strategic quality workouts on both an aerobic basis and a strength building basis. And that's what makes it work for you.
Absolutely. Those other workouts are totally key to making my marathon and ultra training plan work for me. So some people can run 5 or 6 days a week. That's not me. That's when I get burnt out. That's when I get hurt. I mean, I've had every injury in the book that I can think of anyway, hips, knees, ankles, feet, you name it. It's all been affected. I really want to run as long as possible. So if I can take care of myself, find that balance, and make sure that my running career lasts as long as possible, hey, I'm not going to go out and BQ on every marathon. I might never BQ. You know, the way that those Boston qualifiers are going, you have to be so fast now. That's not for me, and that's not always enjoyable for me. So I'm going to be the person who gets that middle of the pack run every time, but she's probably going to be running when she's 95 years old. So we'll make it count.
Yeah. I love how, you talk about, facing the fears and having the courage just to trust your training plan and to not buy into maybe the conventional or traditional thinking, but to make something work for you and your family and your body. That's the most important thing to the lifelong journey of fitness and running.
Yeah, absolutely. It's important, but you hit on the head too. You do have to find what works for you. So this wasn't, I mean, it took a lot of trial and error and a lot of error really to figure out that this was how I was going to be able to sustain training for these longer races that I love to do. This was how I was going to stay active and in love with the sport and still balance my work life and family life. So it's not going to work for everyone, but it's what works for me. And I'm actually really grateful that I figured it out when I did.
Absolutely. And then you add in the yoga. Was it one time a week, or do you have other just maybe shorter yoga workouts or flexibility stuff that you do?
I do a ton of yoga. I don't think I structure it in as well as I could. And sometimes I'm really good at it, and sometimes I could probably be a little bit better. I do a lot of yoga. It's hard to say that I go a day without it. But as far as sitting down and having a solid maybe hour or 90-minute session, I probably do that once or twice a week. But it's going to be a lot of those lower, maybe 20-minute sessions here and there, really anatomy specific stuff based on what hurts and what I need and what my body feels like.
Sure. And maybe more of a restorative style, slow yoga versus a power yoga, right?
Totally. Yeah. Once or twice a week, I'm going to hit those power yoga sessions where, you know, my body is challenging me and I'm going to challenge it right back. But most of those sessions throughout the week are going to be, like you said, more restorative, sink into those postures and really get those muscles lubed up.
And I'm sure, that adds an element of the mental side, the mental training too for you as far as mantras and just the breath and the mental control too.
Totally. I mean, I used a lot of breath work unknowingly when I was going through therapy after the plane crash that I was in. And fast forward a few years later, you know, this year when I got my yoga teacher training and I was learning about pranayama, which is breath technique, and meditation and the benefits behind them, it was like a huge light bulb went off in my life. And I'm like, oh my gosh, now I totally understand why my counselor and therapist had me doing this on a regular basis. And I totally understand how activating your parasympathetic nervous system is beneficial to people with anxiety or depression symptoms or just higher stress symptoms at all. I went from just simple 5 minutes a day of meditation and breath work, went from having multiple panic and anxiety attacks a day to having like maybe one a week. That's pretty liberating. That's really cool. So there's a lot to be said for discovering the power of that stuff.
Absolutely. And I wish more runners would discover the power of it from the breath standpoint and the mind control, the meditation part of it, but also just, yeah, the flexibility and the postures too. And I feel like yoga's catching on with runners, but it still has a long way to go for runners actually implementing it into their training.
Absolutely. And there's so much, yoga's one of those things, like the more you know, the less you actually know. So there's so much to learn and there's so much to apply. You know, at first, maybe it's just the asanas, maybe it's just the practice and postures that are benefiting you. And then after that gets built into your practice more, then maybe you start digging into meditation or pranayama and breath work. And you're like, oh, there's a little bit more. So the further you get into it, the more you realize how much there is that can benefit you just in life, but also in running. You know, people often ask, how do I run for 12 hours and 15 minutes? Like we did for the 50 miler without headphones or entertainment or anyone to talk to. Cause there's stretches of that time where you don't see people. You're by yourself in the middle of the woods following the, you know, chalk marks or flags they have set up to mark the course. So how do you keep yourself entertained? I rely a lot on mantras and breath work. So it keeps me entertained, keeps me moving.
That's funny, and only runners, trail runners, and ultra runners can relate to that because some people just don't get it.
Yeah, totally. There's something really cool about just being stuck in your own head and surrendering to the fact that you have to be alone with yourself.
So, yeah, we talked about the training and yoga. Also want to talk about nutrition and how that plays into the whole training program that you have. How do you make it work for the family? I'm always interested in seeing how people approach that.
Your phone call today was right smack in the middle of my meal prep. So if there's one thing that I can say is my sanity and lifesaver in life right now and life work balance, it's meal prepping. So I'm the kind of person that doesn't thrive a lot or doesn't need to thrive a lot on variety. I need consistency. So I can go, you know, eating the same salad every single day for lunch and not get bored of it because it's fuel and it's what I need and it's fast and it's convenient. So I pre-make, I mean, if you go to my Instagram stories later, you're going to see just a slew of what my meal prep looks like. It's veggies and shrimp and rice and chicken and hard-boiled eggs and overnight oats and chia seed pudding and apples and nut butters. It's a lot of really good whole foods with a great balance of carbohydrates, solid lean proteins, and then I personally love fat, so I'm going to throw a slab of butter on every single one of the meals that I make.
Do you put any recipes with the stories or links to it on your blog at all?
I haven't. I think I'm going to. Just in the last week, the number of people who have been asking me for meal prep tips and recipes has kind of increased. So you read my mind. I was actually going to sit down and hammer out a blog in the next couple of days about what my meal prep looks like, because that absolutely saves my sanity. When you can open up the fridge in the morning and have breakfast, lunch, and three snacks ready to go, and maybe even some variety within them, it's an absolute lifesaver.
Yeah, the meal prep, it's all about planning, thinking ahead, because as busy people and runners especially, when we're trying to cram in all these things and still run but stay fueled, and when we don't prepare and we don't have something ready to go that's healthy and wholesome, and that's when we're going to make bad decisions. We're going to go through a drive-through. We're going to pick up something from a store, whatever it may be, but taking just a few minutes to plan and meal prep, it goes a long way to staying on track nutritionally.
Huge. And I have the world's largest sweet tooth. My husband is probably surprised that I'm not already diabetic. So if I don't have stuff ready to just grab in my fridge, the first thing that I'll go for is those quick, bad, dense calories that don't have any nutritional value that are going to, you know, fuel me immediately and then cause a massive crash after. So there's nothing good in it. I've learned my lesson too many times. I know that if I spend the hour or two here and there meal prepping and getting that out of the way, it's going to save me so much time and so much sanity throughout the week that it's priceless.
So true. And then does the meal prep, I mean, that's for the family as a whole too, right?
Yeah, I overmake the meal. So instead of just making 5 breakfasts for myself, 5 lunches for myself, I probably have 12 mason jars of different breakfast options. We just finished hard boiling a dozen eggs. There's 10 apples down there, pre-portioned nut butters to grab. I love to dip my apple in peanut butter or almond butter. And then there's, probably 10 to 12 different like lunch or dinners prepped already. We kind of interchange them depending on the night. So like tonight we had a sit down family dinner that I didn't meal prep. I just made for us because I had the time for it. But if we have a night where we're all kind of on a different schedule, there's, you know, taco bowls you can grab. There's honey glazed chicken you can grab. There's shrimp and rice bowls you can grab. There's 4 different options that depending on who wants what that night, throw it in the microwave and heat it up and go.
That sounds delicious. And do you
throw? It's really good.
Yeah. Do you throw any freezer meals in there and have those at the ready too to throw in the oven if you get home late from an activity or a game or something like that?
No, our leftovers are pretty fresh. Occasionally in the winter, I'll make a couple of crock pots in a row, and that's really when we end up with like the freezer meals to take out for later. But for the most part, I make stuff pretty fresh for the week. So the stuff that I'm making, these little bowls, rice bowls and burrito bowls and stuff, I know they're going to go within 4 or 5 days, and there's nothing that's in them that's going to spoil within 4 or 5 days, you know?
Yeah, that's nice to know that you always have fresh stuff. Maybe it's in season or produce, and yeah, you're getting good, wholesome foods just, continuously and variety.
Yeah, it's just I just try to keep it as simple as possible. Like I said, I don't need a lot of variety. I need consistency and simplicity. So if I have a couple of options in the fridge, everybody knows it's in there. If they want something different, they can certainly contribute and make it themselves. But occasionally, you know, 3 or 4 nights a week, we're going to be sitting down at the dinner table and having dinner together. So it's really those, nights where there's soccer or, Tuesday nights I teach aqua spin at 7 p.m. So those are going to be a little bit of the more chaotic nights where we know we're not going to be sitting down as a family. So we need to have a few convenience options ready to go that are healthy.
Yeah, I love that. And it goes back to making it work for you, your family, and setting up everybody for success, because nutrition is so fundamental and foundational for mental clarity, lifelong of health. So good work there. Keep that up with the meal prep, and I know you will.
Yeah, thanks. Absolutely.
And you talked about 2017 being a big year with races and some big goals. I want to hear this story about the 50 miler though, and the rain that you had during the race.
Oh my gosh. We didn't realize when we registered for this 50 miler in November of 2016, it was called the Dirty German 50 miler. We didn't realize just how dirty we were going to get. Race day came, the forecast wasn't looking amazing. We overpacked because we were hoping for the best, but kind of knew we had to prep for the worst. It was cold. It rained the entire time. They had to reroute us 3 times because the river ended up overflowing and washing out the course to the point where, you know, the first loop that we did, they let us cross the river. By the time we came in for the second loop, it was so dangerous, they wouldn't let us cross the river anymore. And it had almost washed away one of our aid stations. So if you can imagine, the best way that I've been able to explain this, if you can imagine 7 inches of brownie batter thick mud, that was probably 75% of the course. The other 25% of the course was either river crossings or puddles just as deep as the river, that there was no hope. There was no hope for dry feet. There was no hope for toenails. There was no hope for warmth. We had an amazing crew. They did have a shorter distance, and some of the ladies that we run with went up and made a day of it. So they crewed for us, but they also participated in one of the shorter distances. So they had hot chocolate ready for us on our loops. They had boiled and salted potatoes. They had ramen soup. You know, my fingers were so frozen, I couldn't take my shoes off. I couldn't untie the laces on my shoes. My fingers just didn't work. It was bizarre. So they had to take off my shoes for me. They had to change my socks for me because I couldn't. My hands wouldn't work. They were, you know, spoon feeding us soup and calories, anything that we could get in while we were in there before we made our way out on the next loop. And it was phenomenal. I have no idea how we stayed so positive. I have no idea how we kept going. It was myself and 2 other women that were trying this distance for the first time and really putting ourselves out there and challenging ourselves. I had a smile on my face the entire time. I felt like I was almost delirious on the 48th mile because I was still running and I couldn't believe it. And in the middle of the woods, I remember screaming, "It's working! It's working!" Because I couldn't believe that I was still going and we were actually going to accomplish this feat that I think they had the highest number of dropouts they've ever had during the race because of the weather. They had the highest number of people just not even show up for the race because of the weather. And here we were, 3 ladies from, you know, the middle of Maryland, from completely different backgrounds, that set a goal up at 6 months prior and were like, all right, we're going to go for it and see what happens. And we did it. We actually did it. So 12 hours and 15 minutes later, we crossed the finish line. And I screamed. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. We did it.
Unbelievable. That is so cool. And you still had a really good time considering the bad conditions and mud. I'm sure your shoes were twice as heavy as they normally are, just caked with mud.
Overcoming they were trashed.
Overcoming the adversity, the unknowns of rerouting the course and all these things, but still overcoming that. That is awesome. That's a epic adventure for sure. And how many people finished the 50 mile?
I think there were 75, maybe. I'd have that to go back and look. There were not many, and not many people, but very, very few women that actually finished.
Sure. That is great. I love that story. And then recently, though, you also did the Ragnar DC Relay. Tell me about that race.
I'm in a free social media running community for moms called Moms Run This Town. And I joined when I moved out to Maryland 2 years ago because I didn't know how to make friends as an adult. I'd never lived away from home. So I was always around my friends, and moving literally halfway across the country, I had to start from scratch. And what other way to do that but find other people who love what you love? So I found this social media running group 2 years ago and started showing up to runs. And they've become some of my closest friends and just the most amazing women. So we do this DC Ragnar every year. We actually participate in several Ragnar events, both trail and road. But DC is probably one of my favorite ones every year. We start in Western Maryland. It's 204 miles through the night. We started on a Friday morning. We usually finish sometime Saturday afternoon or early evening. And it's just six women in well, 12 women, two vans, six women in each van, running, you know, leg after leg after leg through any conditions possible and pulling it together for a stellar finish.
That sounds really fun. I just did the market to market relay here in Nebraska. It's about 80 miles, so it's just a day-long event. And we had eight runners, and yeah, it's just so much fun. The camaraderie, the teamwork, the strategizing. The day goes by so fast, and you have so much fun. And yeah, you go out there and do your thing on the legs. And how many stages did you run then? You've got 12 people on your team, 200 miles.
Yep.
Yeah, what did your 12, stages look like?
12 people, 200 miles. Everybody does three legs. So my first leg was, I was runner 10 this year. My first leg was, almost 9 miles on this. Oh, I called it the green tunnel. It was absolutely worse than a treadmill. Long straight path with trees and bushes around me. No spectators, no one was able to get to the trail. It was literally straight. There was not a single turn on the entire thing. And it kind of got to be almost hilarious as you ran because the trees started kind of moving in and, you know, it was just this long, straight green tunnel. And it felt like it was never going to end. It was really kind of a mind game. It was also really hot. We just had this really weird summer snap in the middle of at the end of September out here in Maryland. So it was almost 90 degrees without a breeze and higher humidity than we're supposed to have at the end of September out here. So it was out of season conditions and certainly took its toll. I was struggling to keep even a 10-minute mile pace on that run. Flat, boring, long. Oh, the green tunnel. My midnight run was my redemption run. So I ran about 1:30 in the morning. I had a 10K. It was a hilly run, so kind of like a roller coaster, if you can imagine, just going up and down and up and down for 6.2 miles straight. But it was so cool. The temperature had dropped to probably 30 degrees, so it was about 58 degrees out, maybe 60 degrees. Stunning breeze. I mean, just beautiful. Yeah, you're in the middle of the woods, and it's dark out, and there's really no one around you. But it was so beautiful and it was so, I mean, those were perfect running conditions. So I was flying. I was doing like an 8:17 pace, which for me on hills is phenomenal. My last run on no sleep was 2 miles the next day around noon. So again, back to that 90 degrees, hot and humid. And I knew it was going to be 1 mile straight down and then 1 mile straight up. So I just went as fast as I could and knocked it out. I knew we had one runner, our final runner, 12, had a 12-mile run for her last run. And I knew that the sooner we got done, the less intense that was going to be for her, you know? So we were all kind of pushing through that cooler night and morning, early morning weather to get it out of the way and get our runs done as fast as possible so she could get started as soon as possible. But she was a champ. I mean, I think she was running in 90, 91 degree heat through the middle of DC traffic, other runners. She did phenomenally. So the coolest part about that is the finish line though. You know, when you get all of your runners together, your entire team, all 12 runners come in, and run under that Ragnar arch, that's kind of like, that makes the entire thing. It's funny cause you do it. I think we did it in about 35 hours, which for us was pretty quick. But you think back on the weekend and 35 hours was a blink of time. It goes by so quickly.
Yeah, it does go by so quick and so fun. So many memories that you have there. And I highly recommend if anybody hasn't done a team relay race like the Ragnar, or there's so many around the country now, Hood to Coast, there's Brew to Brew.
Oh, yeah.
And in Kansas City, the Market to Market team has one in Iowa and Ohio. Get plugged in, find a team, join up. They are so much fun.
Absolutely. Part of the challenge is like what happens to your body after, you know, a day and a half of stress and running and no sleep and weird food and you know, being around five other stinky teammates stuck in a van, you know, what happens when all of those conditions converge and your team's relying on you to finish your leg before the next person starts? It's a blast. Hood to Coast is my bucket lister for as far as relays go.
Yeah, it adds a different element to it for sure. But then your next race is here in a couple of weeks, right? It's the Marine Corps Marathon.
Yeah, I just finished my last training run for the Marine Corps Marathon, October 22nd, and then I have the my last race of the year, Richmond Marathon down in Virginia in November.
So that'll be a quick turnaround. What is that, 3 weeks to get ready for the Richmond Marathon?
Yep. I'm actually using the Marine Corps Marathon as my final training run for Richmond. I'm running the Marine Corps Marathon to tribute a friend of mine that we lost in 2004 in Iraq. He was in the Marine Corps. It's kind of been a bucket list race for me. And when we moved out to Maryland 2 years ago, I realized that it was actually possible. You know, now it was in my backyard. So we have a couple of ladies that were training for it all together. I made it into the lottery this year, and I have a special shirt being made with his picture on the back. And my goal is to really just enjoy it. Sip, you know, his picture is going to be up on mile 11 for the Blue Mile. There's going to be crowd support, DC. I mean, we run through a lot of the monuments and historic parts of DC, and I really just want to sit back and enjoy it and soak it all in. So I'm really not going for time on this one. I'm going for pure bliss experience. So I think using that as just an experience instead of pushing myself, it's going to make that a really great final training run to then 3 weeks later turn around and crush Richmond and really just shoot for that big PR there.
Yeah, I love that approach of running for a purpose on one and then crushing the next one. And when we run for a purpose or someone else, something else, it's that motivation, and it brings something out in us that we don't just get from just running on our own. It's something special.
Definitely, yeah. It's a pretty big moment. You know, he passed in 2004, so this is 13 and a half years in the making. It's cool.
That is cool. And what has been your greatest memory through the years from all the races and the training and places that you've been with running? What's been a greatest memory?
I mean, you can't really beat your first marathon, right? Like that's cool. There's things I can pick out throughout the years. So I managed a health club in northern Minnesota for over 7 years. And there was this gentleman that used to work out there, and he was like the king of ultras of northern Minnesota. And he was the race founder and director of one of the trail runs up there, the Voyageur Trail half and full marathon, which is actually the half is a full marathon and the full is a 50 miler. but he had passed away, and they renamed that race after him. The Voyageur Trail half is now called the Eugene Curnow Trail Marathon. And I remember registering to do it in his honor, since he was such a good friend and a mentor in my running career, that I wanted to run it in honor of him. And I remember him laughing when he was marking the course, and he'd come into the gym and work out afterward, and he'd talk about the power lines and how they're going to have such a tough run this year. And, you know, oh, he really gave it to him this year. And he had such a contagious laugh that when I was running that race, I got to certain stages and I could hear him laughing. And I just looked up and I was just like, man, Gene, you're giving it to us this year. You're really giving it to us. But his wife was at the finish line handing out our medals. So that was insanely memorable for me. That was a huge one. But your first marathon, you know, my baby was at the finish line. He was a year and a half old. That's really cool. And then he was there this year at Grandma's Marathon to give me a high five at mile 26. So, yeah, nothing beats your family being there for you.
No kidding. Yeah, those are some great memories for sure. And what's been one life lesson that you've taken from running?
Gosh, one life lesson from running. When it sucks, you got to keep going. You know, I learn absolutely more from my really awful, horrible runs than I do from my easy, successful runs. So I think the struggles are worth it. You're going to learn more from your struggles than you are going to learn from your successes. So embrace those struggles because they're there for a reason.
So true, and absolutely agree with that. And it's the tough times in life. It's the tough days, those valleys, those low points. When we take those on and we learn from them, that's when we're going to come out the other end stronger. And that relates to running too. And especially when we're running ultras and the long distances, there's going to be periods of tough times. But when we get through them and you finish it, that sense of accomplishment and crossing the finish line, there's nothing else like it.
Absolutely. Forward is a pace. So if you can just remember that, even if it's 1 foot in front of the other, forward is a pace.
Hey, I like that. Yeah, that's so true. And say you're out on the trail doing your run and somebody comes up to you, they're a brand new runner. They want to get into it. Maybe they want to run their first ultra. And you have one piece of advice to give them. What do you say?
Do your homework. Know what you're getting into. Find your support team. You can't do it alone. And kudos to the people who think they can and pull it off. But it's so much more enjoyable when you embrace the community. You embrace the people around you. And that's probably my biggest piece of advice.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And the do your homework. So the do your homework would be to prevent a 5 mile elliptical before their first marathon, right?
do not train for a marathon on the elliptical. Just don't do it. Use it in your training. There's benefit to that, but don't train for your marathon on an elliptical.
Yeah. Oh. That's funny. Well, Amy, thanks so much again. I had a blast talking with you. You have some incredible stories. I'm excited to see how the Marine Corps Marathon goes for you and the Richmond. How can we connect with you and see how those races go?
So I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and I have a blog, Running Yogi Mom. So on Instagram and Facebook, it's Running Yogi Mom, and then my blog is runningyogimom.blog.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll all connect with you there. I'll have the links in the show notes for everybody. And Amy, I appreciate it. Wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time and thanks for the opportunity.
Connect with Amy at her Running Yogi Mom blog or find all the links to connect with her in the show notes at usaendurance.com/035. Give us your feedback by leaving a rating and review. And if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends. Thanks for listening, and until next time, lace up those shoes, hit the trail, and train hard. Thank you for listening to the Freedom to Run podcast. If you're ready to take your training to the next level and reach your running and fitness goals, we invite you to join the USA Endurance community at usaendurance.com.